This episode of iRescue Radio is brought to you by ProCPR.org. Online CPR training, when you want it, where you want it.
And welcome back to iRescue Radio. I'm Roy.
I'm Jody.
I'm Dan.
And we're going to cover everything from the so-called faulty speed sensors of Air France that went down to the hot topic being iPhone high risk of cancer. In fact, cell phones is a general rule.
Yeah.
But there's been some articles that come out that say anything that uses multiple radio frequencies could increase the risk of cancer.
Yeah.
Should be interesting.
Yeah. We've got some pretty credible sources that we're going to take some pieces from. But you know, does anybody else have any problems with pests around their house?
Oh, pests.
Yes. I mean, to some degree. Some I actually pay vet bills on.
Yeah. Yes.
No, that's pets. Those are pets, Dan.
No. Yeah.
They're turning into pests very quickly, I'm sure.
Daddy got the S on the wrong side of the T again, Mama.
So was it bad when I took the chipmunk in for rabies shots?
You know, when you start treating your squirrels as family members, there's an issue.
And your cats as rejects. Well, we've got raccoon problems.
You still have raccoon problems.
Yeah.
This has been an ongoing battle.
They've made, I did some studies on this. They made our deck into a coon latrine.
Yuck.
Yeah, that's the official terminology. They made it into a raccoon latrine.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Well, it's piles of poo everywhere. Piles of poo on the walkway. My kids want to come up the stairs. They want to walk across the deck. We like to eat out there. We like to have the kids be able to go out on a nice sunny day with their, you know, shoes off.
And they are not affected by your cats.
They're no. No, I think they would eat our cats. Yeah. I mean, these coons are big.
Yeah,
wow. Some of them.
I would be concerned that they're that close to my home and my kids.
Well, here's the bigger problem. My vet told me about this. 60 to 90%, and there's a variance there because the, what do they call it, the adolescent coons actually have a higher probability. So if they're the younger the raccoon, the higher the probability. But 60 to 90% of all raccoons, regardless of where they're at, carry worms.
60 to 90
Yes.
Percent.
Yes. Adult raccoons are 60 to 70%, and the article I read was 90% of young raccoons have this gut worm. Problem is its larva is in its poo.
Yeah.
Right? It's feces.
Right.
Well, if you, by dropping food on the deck and the kid eats the food, if they get it on their hands and then they walk inside they touch something, a ball on the deck. And
cats walking through it, dragging it in.
Yep. That larva does not have a host other than the raccoons. So it kills other animals too.
Okay.
But it's known in humans, 26 different cases, to go to the brain, the eyes, or to the central nervous system.
Oof.
And it's been fatal the majority of the time.
So it's not just rabies.
No, and there's no cure.
I mean, that's what I think about when I think of coons.
Yeah, I know. Or just the mess. You know, and I was telling my wife, I said, who cares if they're messy?
But they're also kind of a vicious little varmint.
Well, they can be. I mean, they spook pretty easy. Would they just stop pooping?
Where they poop?
Be
more selective where they...
Yeah, like out in the woods. We got 4 acres they could choose.
Why?
Why on my deck?
So wait a minute. Deck.
Yeah, I was going to say, latrine, though. You said they made a latrine.
Meaning it's a repetitive pooping issue.
So you mean the raccoons have areas where they just pick an area?
Yeah. Anybody seeing any latrines around here? Yeah, there's one up there. You just could climb up them stairs up there and take a dump right on there, right there. They keep
it
clean.
Your deck.
Yeah, they keep it clean for us even.
They won't go anywhere else except there.
Well, I don't know if they won't go anywhere else.
You know really what I think you need to do?
Huh?
Is
other than
supply
what I'm
toilet
doing,
paper. Just put little spindles out
you
there.
You need to make it a regular rest area.
That's it. That's it. You could put maps of Michigan and let them know where they're at. And they're,
you're right.
You are here.
Why didn't I think of that sooner? Listen, or I could tranquilize them.
Vending machine?
Put diapers on them. You know, some people put bands around their necks. I could put
Have you tried cayenne pepper?
On my spaghetti? I'm not wasting good pepper on raccoons. Yes, I have. I went and got some of the pest or varmint repellent.
Yeah.
That is an irritant, right? You spray it on anywhere that you don't want them to go. Yeah, right.
Didn't work.
Yeah, they're like, oh, goody. Spicy.
spicy place to go poo.
Yeah. No, we get spice in our bird seed. See, this is the underlying problem. We were feeding birds. And so they developed this track record of following the bird seed up to the top of the
deck. Dump out.
Or even I've seen them scooping the stuff out of the bird feeder right into their mouth. Well, now we've removed that. Well, guess what? There hasn't been bird seed up there forever.
Huh.
And they're still coming.
But it's their latrine.
It's their latrine. They know. The only way to kill this stuff.
So they're not getting dinner and a poo? They're just getting poo?
Right. Now this is just an outhouse.
Okay. Portage. Are you charging the same amount?
It comes at quite a price, Dan, let me just say. Okay, we could have children listening, so we won't go into the details of how I'm managing these. But let me tell you about how you have to manage the poo. So if anybody else out there listening to iRescue Radio has the same problem, here's the deal. Bleach doesn't kill it. It will not kill the larva. It has to be super heated.
Really?
So even if
you're not microwaving it,
you have to glove up. No, Dan.
Hey, Daddy, what's that cooking?
Yeah.
Never mind.
Are those no bakes? There's
a really awkward odor in the home.
Either those are no bakes or Daddy's superheating the coon do again. An
extension cord and a microwave on the patio.
Well, for the sake of getting off this topic soon, here's the bit of useful information. You have to boil water and pour water over whatever's remaining after you scoop it up.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, people, you don't want it in you. So glove up. Be careful what you use to scoop it with.
I'd have a mask on.
Yeah, well, you do. Mm-hmm. If it's dry, you're saying wear an actual particulate mask, not just a nuisance dust mask, but a particulate.
Yeah.
Like, what do they call those? H1N1 masks, right?
Yeah.
Whatever that is. Whatever that HEPA filter mask is. Google 3M that. Mask. And don't spread it around. Don't blow it with your blowers to get it off the deck. In fact, spray it and moisten it down. You can go to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, cdc.gov. Look up raccoon worms in poo. I think you can find it that way. And or under brain worms, because that's where it goes. In infants and children, it tends to go to their brain, and it causes these larva-based tumors, and it's deadly. And so I am against these poor little animals with a vengeance, because there's no cure for this either.
Right.
Once you have it, you have it. There is no cure found yet. Yeah. So anyways, I was wondering if you guys had any.
Nope. Got a few mouse issues.
So they're a pain too, but
yeah.
If anybody else has any good ideas on how to get rid of raccoons, please submit those to www.irescueradio.com. We'd like to hear how you're getting rid of the pests in your life, and we're not talking about family members.
Move back into the city, Roy.
I guess so. They're there, too.
Ready or not, it's time for this week's Hot Topic.
All right, so, you know, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but they're saying now that this Air France Airbus may have gone down due to faulty speed sensors. Did you guys read about this?
Yeah, I actually heard that in the news. And, you know, I think it's just a quick knee-jerk reaction just so they can say something so they can appease the public because they don't have any clue whatsoever.
Yeah.
They don't have the actual parts of the plane.
Well, it sounds
the
like they're taking some heat from not talking to the media sooner.
Yeah.
So they've got some PR issues going on.
Yeah. And, I mean, hard economical times for traveling by air anyway, right? The last thing they need
is super sensitive issues. You hate to speculate.
Yeah.
After reading the article, nobody still knows.
No, nobody knows because they can't find the black box. Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we surely don't want to think that it could have been a terrorist act.
No.
Right?
Right.
So, although there's some speculation there too.
Yeah.
So let's hope that they find that black box soon and we'll get to the bottom of it. But, you know. It's an unfortunate thing anyways, and it's definitely an unfortunate thing for the surviving families of those loved ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope it doesn't happen again anytime soon. Now, in conjunction with the technical difficulties of the Air France crash, I think this is a point of interest.
because everyone has one.
Pretty much. It's, you know, we tried to stay away from sweeping statements, but I think you're pretty close, Dan.
Sweep away, old man.
Yeah, sweep. What do I say? Sweep away. phones in general, cell phones, are becoming almost as necessary as a vehicle.
Yes.
They are a necessary part of business, at least here in Western civilization they are.
Yes.
And there is some fairly substantial research that's trying to come out about these, about having these high-frequency radio waves so close to your cranium.
Mm-hmm.
We'll look into it, okay? But this grabbed my attention because, quite frankly, I think the iPhone's just too cool.
Well, it is extremely cool, and if there's a misnomer that I've had about the radio frequencies, now, Roy, you and I talked about this. Our wives say, get the phone off your belt clip.
Yeah, take it off.
Take it off. You're going to have cancer of the hip. And it's a necessary evil. I deal with it, but I never really think. I always assumed it was just the battery.
Have you ever seen anything with statistics, actual hard facts?
Well, here we go. This is from the National Cancer Institute. U.S. Mm-hmm. National Institutes of Health, you can find it at www.cancer.gov. They have a printed fact sheet here about cellular telephone use and cancer risk. And some of the key points are cell phones emit radio frequency energy, which is another name for radio waves.
Mm-hmm.
Exposure to high levels of radio frequency energy can heat body tissue. But radio frequency energy exposures from cellular telephones are too low to cause significant tissue heating. Concerns have been raised that radio frequency energy from cellular telephones may pose a cancer risk to users. Researchers are studying tumors of the brain and central nervous system and other sites of the head and neck because cell phones are held next to the head when used. Now, studies have not shown any consistent link between cell phone use and cancer, but scientists feel that additional research is needed before firm conclusions can be drawn.
Yep.
So those were some of the top points that they wanted to make right in the first box when you get to that fact sheet.
And who's paying for this fact sheet? Cell phone companies?
I don't know.
No, I don't know.
No, they wouldn't.
What? No, this is saying that it doesn't cause a problem. That's what this is stating.
Right. Now it says RF energy is a form of electromagnetic radiation.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. And they're saying those are the three key things that they emit: radio frequency. Right.
Which we know.
Low frequency.
Yep. Cell technology is relatively new and still changing, so there are a few long-term studies of the effects of RF energy from cellular telephones on the human body. And then the number of cell phone users has increased rapidly, which would skew any research you've done in the past because your pool of candidates has expanded greatly. It'd be like if everybody in the world started smoking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what were we hearing at that conference we went to? How many new cell phones in India every month? Was it like 7 million new phones every month?
It was
an enormous number of cell phones. Not laptops, not desktops, but
cell phones. Well, you know what's interesting though, even with cell phones, I guess it's a different type of thing because a radio frequency or RF radio waves are coming from the cell phone, but it's a form of radiation. What about wireless internet? What about wireless computers? What about our, like, not only that, but think about all the wireless stuff that's happening around us all the time.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point.
But it's electrical towers. We've never wanted to buy a home that's near one of those electrical exchange.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
There is a body of proof. I mean, there is inconclusive proof that high power frequency, people that live near them have higher risk of cancer. Right. That's inconclusive. That's absolute. Cell phones, we don't have that body of proof yet.
It says here because there have not been the long-term studies done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you think about how fast cell phones have grown, we were just talking about the bag bones before we started the show.
Yeah, I used to have one.
Yeah, I had one too. They had great range.
Oh, take them on the moon. Get a signal.
Yeah. I wonder how much energy those things were putting out. They were much more high power, right?
But they weren't connected to your body.
They weren't connected to your body, nor was the headset connected to your body. You could bring the headset up, and that did not transfer the frequency. The antenna did. Now, here's some interesting stuff. How is cellular telephone user exposed to RF energy? And it says a cell telephone main source of RF energy is produced through its antenna. The antenna of a handheld cellular telephone is in the handset. which is typically held against the side of the head when a telephone is in use. Mm-hmm. The closer the antenna to the head, the greater the person's expected exposure to RF energy. Now, we've had some thoughts about this and using earbuds, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. The amount of RF energy absorbed by a person decreases significantly with increasing distance between the antenna and the user. Here's our wives, right?
Yep.
Can you talk through something other than this, the handheld? The intensity of RF energy emitted by a cell phone depends on the level of the signal sent to or from the nearest base station. When a call is placed from a cell phone, a signal is sent from the antenna of the phone to the nearest base station antenna. The base station routes the call through a switching center where the call can be transferred to another cell telephone, another base station, or to the local landline telephone system. The farther a cell phone is from the base station antenna, the higher the power level needed to maintain the connection. Mm-hmm. This distance determines in part the amount of RF energy exposed to the user. So, what determines how much RF energy a cell phone user experiences? Check this out. The number and duration of calls, the amount of cell phone traffic at a given time, the distance from the nearest cell base station, the quality of the cellular transmission, how far the antenna is extended, and the size of the handset, whether or not a hands-free device is used.
Okay, so that would infer that if you live in a heavily populated metropolitan area close to all kinds of cell phone towers, your power is very low.
Right.
If you live
where I do.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh.
You are
at high like system. On one bar.
There you go.
All the time.
But are they saying that you have to actually be, the phone's got to be active emitting that? In other words, no, if it's receiving on your hip, you're not or receiving, sending. But what if your phone doesn't go off all day, but it's still on your hip?
My cell phone's always sending and receiving. It's always getting emails. Mm-hmm. It's always sending out information.
And that's why they're picking on the iPhone here.
I think
because of three key things it's doing. It's doing Wi-Fi, it's doing radio frequency, and it's doing Bluetooth.
Yep.
Now, speaking of Bluetooth, now, I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but I did. When I would use my Bluetooth headset a lot, I would get a headache.
I use all mine all the time.
And
nothing's happened to you.
I speak fine.
He slurs his speech.
I'm using my headset right now. Well, I kind of wonder about that because I have experienced that. Where when I use the Bluetooth headset, the closer it is to my ear, my head will feel tight and I get a headache. Now, is it just mental or
I've called you on my cell phone with Bluetooth in your ear and seen your left pupil blow.
Well, there you go. So that's what it is.
Problem is, if you were close enough to see his pupil blow,
why was I calling him on the cell phone? Is there a conspiracy theory here?
Your story does not hold water, Roy.
You're sadistic.
What kind of signals are you sending
me? Yeah, that's right, literally. Well, what studies have been done and what do they show? Well, numerous studies have investigated the relationship between cell phones use and the risk of developing brain cancer, but results from long-term studies are still limited. Several studies have investigated the risk of developing three types of brain tumors, namely glioma, meningioma, and acoustic neuroma. Results from the majority of these studies have found no association between handheld cell phone use, because they have limited studies, and the risk of brain cancer. Now, a lot of us that are stuck on using our cell phones because it's a normal part of our business day are going to have a hard time swallowing this inconclusive evidence.
I mean, it's literally, we've gotten rid of home phones in many instances to just go with our cell phones.
Yeah,
it's almost the case at my office.
Sure.
Right. I need people to be able to get a hold of me anytime, so I rarely use my desk phone.
Right.
Yeah, the cell phone's the
primary. It's becoming far more integrated than it was 5 years ago.
And it says long-term studies have suggested slightly increased risk of certain types of brain tumors. So they are showing some studies that are showing increases, but they said further evaluation of long-term exposures, more than 10 years, is needed. You know who we're going to see this in? All the kids that are carrying their cell phones.
Yeah, it's
because their brains are still developing. Mm-hmm. Their little, areas of those neurons are developing. Yep. And we're seeing some, I mean, this is going to have to happen.
But you still got variables there. I watch my teenage kids walk around with their mobile phones. Mm-hmm. They're not talking on them. Infrequently do they talk on them. They are texting constantly.
Well, that's good.
So what impact does that have?
Well, all right, let's get to the bones of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do children have a higher risk of developing cancer due to cell phone use? I think about this just with me using cell phones around them, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Well, it says there are currently no data. There's no data on cell phone use and risk in children because no published studies to date have included children. Hmm. Cell phone use is increasing rapidly in children and adolescents, and they are likely to accumulate many years of exposure during their lives. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
In addition, children may be at greater risk because their nervous systems are still developing at mm-hmm. time of exposure. So as to not cover all the bad news without any hope here, let's talk about what we can do to decrease theirs and our exposure to RF energy. My wife's been telling me this for years. Reserve the use of cell phones for shorter conversations mm-hmm. or for times when a conventional phone is not available. Otherwise, use a conventional phone. We all have phones on our desks.
Too convenient.
I know it's convenient, but what's it worth? Dead is convenient, too.
I don't care then.
No, but the rest of the people in the office?
Yeah.
We'll be going, Yahoo!
Ding dong, the witch is dead. Just kidding. 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 Switch to a type of cell phone with a hands-free device. Like ours all have Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we also have the ability to go hands-free.
Mm-hmm.
And we have these, you know, we got Blackberries,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
And you've got the ability to go hands-free.
I've got a Bluetooth.
On your mobile.
But like I said, when I would wear my Bluetooth
yeah,
on
yeah,
a regular
yeah.
basis. Now, maybe it was the way it fit.
Okay.
I don't know. But
we
stressed
were just,
out your glasses line.
But we were just mm-hmm. talking about using the earbuds
mm-hmm.
right.
with Instead the mic.
Right.
You don't like the way it sounds when I use it.
Yes, I do. It's your Bluetooth I don't like.
Wow.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
I'm right. talking about the actual hardwire.
Yeah, but then it gets snagged on things.
Well, that can be a problem, and that's probably why people don't use
cell
it.
Cell phone management.
But if it can mm-hmm. if it can make me not walk around with a tumor growing in my head, I think I can learn.
iRescue Radio's top medical news.
I don't really feel like laughing anymore.
Are you old?
Maybe over 40. Maybe over 29.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
According to this article.
Yeah, it says, don't worry. You won't lose your sense of humor as you get older, but you might find it harder to get some jokes.
Hmm.
New Canadian. Hey, at least we didn't pay for this one. The Canucks did.
Mm-hmm.
We like our Canucks.
Yeah.
The Canadians. They play good hockey, hey?
They do, eh?
And make good bacon.
They don't beacon. Say a boot. They say about.
Right. Maybe we should go and get some pasties just to celebrate them.
I sound a little bit Scottish.
Well, that's because there's a lot of Scots up in Canada.
All right.
Right?
I am Canadian.
Well, anyways, the research by Dr. Try to pronounce this. Prathibha Shami, a psychologist with Baycrest Center for Geriatric Care in Toronto, and PhD supervisor Dr. Donald Stuss, is to be published in the September issue of the Journal of the International Neuropsychological Society. Research designed to probe humor comprehension and appreciation, Shami and Stuss found that while older people were just as capable as younger people of getting wordplay jokes,
mm-hmm.
they were not as good at recognizing funny cartoons or identifying funny punchlines to jokes.
Huh.
Nevertheless, when the older people did get the joke, they responded appropriately, showing they were still capable of appreciating jokes they understood.
Come on, Dan, say it. He's waiting. He's
no,
chomping at the bit.
I'm going to wait till the ball's coming across the plate.
All right.
The good news is that aging does not affect emotional responses to humor. We'll still enjoy a good laugh when we get a joke, said Shami. This is important because humor is integral to society, to social interaction, and it has long been postulated that humor may enhance quality of life, assist in stress management, and help us cope with the stresses of aging. The small study involved 20 healthy older adults, just 20.
Big study.
It's huge.
Well, it was a little cold out in Toronto, and they didn't want to travel.
Inconclusive.
So they took the 20 they had in their building.
They went to the local McDonald's.
Yeah, that's about it. That's probably about right. Go to McDonald's at 10 a.m.
Or they're down in Florida where we vacationed. It was
Canada.
Church that morning. It was all the silver hairs.
This is Canada. Man. They went to Tim Hortons.
There you go. In the small study involving 20 healthy older adults with an average age of 73 20. And 17 younger adults with an average age of 28.
17. Ooh, big populace.
In the first of three humor tests, participants were presented with 28 written statements and asked to pick out the humorous ones. One example from the 21 humor statements was a sign in a tailor shop on Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Please have a fit upstairs. The second test, oh, I'm not laughing yet. The second test presented participants with 16 incomplete jokes and asked them to select the funny punchline from a choice of four endings. Yeah. One joke began, the neighbor approached Mr. Smith at noon on Sunday and inquired, "Say, Smith, are you using your lawnmower this afternoon?" "Why, yes, I am," Smith replied warily. "And the funny ending was fine. You won't be wanting your golf clubs. I'll just borrow them." While the other endings were either logical or a non sequitur.
Okay. Non sequitur jokes. I'm ready to go now.
You know, that just, the first of all, how do you measure it with such a thing that's not even a joke? I mean, like a joke.
Yeah.
What about this does not, okay, let me phrase this. Mm-hmm. What about this research is new?
Nothing.
Who doesn't know that as you age, a larger percentage of the population is starting to suffer brain retention or brain issues that they didn't suffer when they were 40?
Right.
The upside, as Roy mentioned, is it did not come out of the U.S. Federal
Reserve
Tax Fund.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing for us. Probably not a good thing for Canadians.
As opposed to the previous study we talked about with cell phones. That's good information.
Yeah.
That's good things to study because it affects everybody. This is duh. It's really duh.
Okay. Yeah.
And they're doing studies on this, and it's getting into Journal of International Neuropsych. They're the ones that need neuropsychological help.
But did you read the conclusion? The conclusion is... Here's the conclusion. All right. This is going to be big. This is huge. This is revealing. This is like top stuff here.
I'm sitting down.
Yep. Ready?
Hit us. I'm belted in.
Here's the conclusion.
Got it?
Older people were not as good as young people at understanding complex humor. Their ability to appreciate jokes they understood was much better than patients who had the brain damage.
Are you kidding me? that's what you came up with?
Now that's funny.
And that was your PhD thesis?
Hey, come on. Why are we spending money for that?
That's unbelievable to me.
I mean, okay, a 12-year-old will laugh at somebody going, "Oop, duty."
Yeah.
Okay, now an 80-year-old is not going to laugh at that.
They're a little pooped out at fart jokes.
Oh, man.
Now it's time for the ProCPR.org Puzzler. What the heck would you do? ProCPR.org. Online training when you want it, where you want it.
So in the heart of training, so that you can at least take something away from this 45-minute session, we thought we'd, you know, kind of ask a question that was really a hot topic with the doctor's episode that we were on not too long ago.
Okay.
When to call 911 and when not to.
Gotcha.
And I know I even second-guess myself at times, even as a paramedic, as to when to call the doctor versus when to call 911. Mm-hmm. How bad do I let it get before I pull the trigger and call 911? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, you and I both know, Jody, they drive their family members in, they drive themselves in. Mm-hmm. This is quite an important training here. So the question is, when should I contact my doctor versus calling 911? Dan?
When I get this gut feeling.
So when would you call?
Anytime there's a suspected airway problem.
Yep, absolutely.
So airway?
Yeah.
What's the difference between airway and breathing, Joe?
Okay, here's this. If you hear this.
We call that stridor breathing.
That means a partial blockage where there's something there causing that major kind of squeaky noise. You don't want that.
Top side of the airway, usually around the larynx.
Oh, okay.
Or a partial obstruction.
So not an M&M up the nose?
Not typically. That usually sounds like this. A little different than.
But Dan, if you're feeding M&Ms to your kids up the nose, they should go in the mouth.
No.
You should go to the ER
for evaluation. I had a friend.
Listen, it's not a Pez dispenser.
Because his other child was saying, "Johnny's bleeding from the nose."
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't bleeding. It was a red M&M melting.
Well, better than a bloody nose.
That's disgusting.
All right. So here we go. Number two, breathing difficulty.
Yes.
Right? So trouble breathing. This can.
How's that different from airway?
I'll explain. Breathing difficulty can be wheezing. Wheezing when they take breath in. We call that inspiratory wheezing. Right? Oh, okay. You hear deep in the lungs, not up in the throat.
Got it.
Deep in the lungs, you hear the little.
So we're talking bronchial. Wheezes.
Yep. And issues. I think I can even get an expiratory wheeze.
That's not good.
That's an allergy. Yeah, that's my allergy. But regardless, that's...
You sound like that every day.
Yeah. Well, here's the difference.
You hear that.
Yeah, if you hear
could
that.
Could you guys dial 911 for me, please?
Yeah. Yeah.
We heard it. Call. Yeah.
There's an albuterol back in my...
The difference is going to be the stress of the person. Yeah. Some people normally have a lot of allergies. Some people normally have a lot of wheezing.
Yep.
And so the idea is when you... see that the person is actually distressed in their face when they're looking like they're in trouble. They're looking like they're panicking.
Blue around the lips.
There's something wrong.
But even before that, you know, here's a good one. My little boy developed these allergies too, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And we're at this dance thing, and he's coughing, caught a cold on top of the allergies. And he was wheezing, inspiratory and expiratory. Now, we have a little albuterol inhaler that the doctors prescribe for us. And that helps clear him up usually. However, I was on number three round, and he still was leaning forward, and he had some retractions. Retractions now, for listeners, is when you see the soft areas around the ribs and the abdomen and the throat, like in the just below the Adam's apple, retract when they're trying to breathe in because you're trying to suck in against tightness. So you get retraction. We look for retractions, and we look for difficulty exhaling as well, which usually is really working hard. They're taking short breaths. But here's a telltale sign. Will they play? Mm-hmm. Will they laugh? Are they in good spirits? Are they hungry? Mm-hmm. And are they having any discoloration? Because if a child is breathing hard and coughing and hacking, but he or she doesn't have any problem playing around, doesn't mean that person can't develop into a problem, but chances are they're not in distress. It's when they quiet down, don't want to be active.
And focus on just breathing.
And they're just working on breathing. Yeah. That is not even a time to start getting concerned. That means we missed some precursors, or they're having an anaphylactic potential reaction, or they're really going into trouble. And that is a 911 call. Now, I'm emphasizing that because we do not call 911 enough on the right times, and we call them many times too much on the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. This is the time to call. You will not be overreacting, and the paramedics normally, when they respond, will tell you, we think this is not an emergency, potentially. Mm-hmm. Now, we're more than happy to take this child in, but this person, I feel comfortable if you decided to take them in. Okay? So it never, ever hurts. I always said paramedics are the last medical professionals to make house calls. Call them. It's what we're there for.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, if it's not an airway or a breathing problem, decreased level of consciousness. Mm-hmm. This is a fatigued, tired, not with it type of person.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Adult, child, or infant.
They don't know where they are, what's going on.
No, or they're really... just disinterested. You can't get them to laugh. They don't want to take a bottle. They're not talking to you. They seem to be really concerned about something. Maybe all they want to do is sleep. In the adult, you're right. And in the older adolescent, you know, where are you? Oh, no. And you're at home. That's a bad sign. And it could be a number of things. And we're not even going to get into that, but it could be a number of things. You can always go out to profirstaid.com and watch all of those review videos for free. You don't even have to register to see them and get that type of training on what to do and how to see unconsciousness and things like that and decrease level of consciousness. But there's a lot of reasons that can cause that. Any reason at all, traumatic or illness, it is a reason to call 911. Do not hesitate. How about major uncontrolled bleeding? What's the difference between major uncontrolled bleeding and minor bleeding? I'd say major bleeding is bright red, hard to stop.
Yeah, any kind of what we call arterial bleeding, that bright red blood that when the heart beats, you see the blood spurt out of the wound.
Or pulsate, sure.
That's the kind of bleeding that's absolutely always a 911 call because that's hard to stop and most likely that person's going to go into shock. Venous bleeding, the type where you get a big cut, may require stitches, blood oozes out, but when you hold direct pressure on it, it doesn't continue bleeding severely for a long period of time. That's kind of a judgment call on the person's part because venous bleeding, as long as the person is fully conscious, alert, able to do whatever they need to, and the bleeding's not continuing to gush out everywhere, that any of the scene probably needed stitches, whatever else. But an ambulance tetanus call, maybe not an ambulance call necessarily.
Right.
But it's an arterial bleeding that's always an ambulance call. When the person is having an altered level of consciousness after a severe bleed, always an ambulance call because of shock. But other than that, there's a judgment call there, that venous tape bleeding.
You bet. Curveball. Ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Nose bleeding that lasts longer than 3 to 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Pinch the nose, lean forward, put a cold pack over the bridge of the nose. It's just not stopping.
Right.
It's large amounts of blood in the sink, in the toilet. They are starting to get nauseated because it's going into their stomach, and it still won't stop after 3 to 5 minutes. What do you think?
That's a 911 call because it could be related to some head injuries.
Yep.
Could be related to actually high blood pressure. Could be related to diabetes even. There's all kinds of things that that could cause that. We don't know.
Yep, and it just isn't stopping.
I would have guessed that.
Yeah,
that's if it's not stopping.
Now, does it depend on the type of, the age of the person?
No, I would say it depends more on time and symptoms. In other words, it's bleeding, and it can still be dark red, like non-arterial venous. But if it's not stopping with, and it could be just because we're not managing it correctly.
Yeah.
But if you put a cold pack over the nose, like a something like an ice cube, you know, wiped in a washcloth, wrapped in a washcloth, you put that over the bridge of the nose, it helps to constrict the blood vessels down, slow the bleeding down. The other part of that is pinching the nose, not tilting the head back because it'll all drain down into the throat and stomach, but to actually lean forward is the preferred method of management. And it doesn't stop in 3 to 5 minutes, which is the average time to stop a venous bleed. It could be either higher up, it could be a hemorrhage of some sort, higher up, and then it's turning dark as it comes down, or it just could be something else, like Jody just said, and needs to be evaluated by the doctor.
Now, what about a child that has frequent nosebleeds?
Yeah, like sinus-related, allergy-related?
I don't know.
Stopping more...
Doesn't take much to create a nosebleed.
Yeah, that's normally nuisance nosebleeds.
Yeah, and there are a lot of children that have, like, especially if you're on certain types of medications, you're on allergy medications, a lot of kids, literally, I mean, it's going to sound gross, but a lot of kids, they do pick their nose quite often, frequently, and the membranes just aren't healed all the time. Yep. And so there are kids that get frequent nosebleeds.
Yep.
And you just need to manage
it. It just seems to be more common in kids. And I think if it becomes an issue where it's happening every single day, then you need to, you know, you know, and always always feel free when it's not an emergency to, that's when you call your doctor, not the ER, but you call your doctor, pediatrician. Okay, so deformed or unstable severe pain in the extremity, right? So a deformed limb, meaning your elbow's in the wrong place, right? Traumatic injury most of the time. Unstable, meaning they're saying, oh, I just fell and I hurt my arm or I hurt my leg. And as you get closer to them, you can see it just seems unstable. Now, we call that in the medical field crepitus or the crunching feeling sound. Normally, we're feeling that because we're stabilizing the extremity. In lay people, we just don't move it. And if they have severe pain, feel unstable, said I heard it crack, any of those, stabilize in the position of comfort, call 911.
Yep.
How about signs of shock? What are the signs of shock?
Well, when you jump back and go, what? No, just kidding.
I can't even laugh at
that. That's what a lot is, because you're getting older.
I know it.
But that's what
let's do a study on that.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what actually a lot of people think. They think somebody just went like,
yeah.
And they say they went in shock. No, no.
That's psychogenic. That's exactly. response, emotional response.
Shock really is a physical reaction, where shock is the body's inability to circulate blood with oxygen in it to the vital organs.
Right.
And so what causes that? Lots of things.
Lots of potential things.
But you're going to see the person have an altered level of consciousness, usually pale, usually cool, moist skin. Usually the person is going to be looking bluish and grayish in the face. Those are going to be some of the signs that you see.
Some of the early signs that you might want to look for is the rapid breathing, rapid pulse.
Yep, absolutely.
Anxiousness, feeling scared. Mm-hmm. They usually compensate quite well in the early stages.
Right.
But that rapid breathing, rapid pulse is real telltale. And the anxiety of, am I going to be okay? Mm-hmm. Am I, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So those are some signs of early stages. And then as Jody just mentioned, you see it start to de-escalate into those, what we call compensative shock and decompensating shock. And then once shock gets to decompensating, which is the slowing of the pulse rate, that is sometimes irreversible and very dangerous.
Very life-threatening.
Yep. So we're going to want to lay them down, elevate the legs if their legs are not broken, back is not injured, and call 911 right away. So decreased LOC, rapid breathing, rapid pulse, scared, anxious, feeling sick, and we don't have to care what's causing the shock. It could just be the signs and symptoms.
Is fainting a reason to call 911?
Not necessarily. It could be, but it doesn't have to be. What you want to know is, will they recover from the fainting spell?
How do you wake them up? You slap them in the face?
Nope. The best thing to do is protect them on the way down.
Yeah.
You know, we think of the classic person in the church. They are kneeling, and they stand up, and they go right down, and you hear a crash, right? And everybody panics. The panic should be, what did they hit on the way down that traumatized the patient?
Right.
It's very common to have what we call a syncopal episode and have it have no pathology whatsoever.
Right.
Maybe they're dehydrated. Maybe it was because they were sitting too long, kneeling too long. It's hot. They're, you know, most of the time I think it's dehydration or low blood sugar.
That's what it was. They were standing in line at a very hot theme park.
There you go.
Very common.
They could have even locked their legs. They could have even locked their knees in place, and that decreases circulation, and then they start moving. It drops the blood pressure down, and they have a syncopal episode. Best thing to do is guide them to the floor safely. That's the idea.
But still get their feet elevated.
Yep. Lay them straight down, unless they do have a neck or back injury or a broken leg or something like that. But then elevate the legs. You can bundle up something like a jacket or a shirt or a hoodie.
Yeah.
You can get a box. You can get a trash can, whatever. And you can even just put them on your knee. Someone kneels down and puts their feet up on your knee temporarily so that you get the blood to rush back to the head. It's kind of neat how the good Lord made us fall down because it brings blood back to the head. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget one of my situations where my wife, early on after we were married, I was a student to become a paramedic at that time, but was not a paramedic, not experienced, and had another couple semesters to go. My wife had a syncopal episode, and quickly after taking a shower, I panicked, thought she was dying of, you know, a brain hemorrhage, right? Knew enough to be dangerous and not enough to help, right? Yep. And guess what Roy did? Kept her sitting up the whole time while she's got snoring respirations instead of laying her down. It wasn't until I laid her down to call 911 that she came back to.
Yeah.
The doctor at the ER said, Roy, you know what the best thing is you did? Left her alone.
Yep. You're
So I never forgot.
Drop her and walk away.
Don't drop her, but lay her down. Yeah. You know. So it's interesting, but laying people down helps the blood go back to the brain. That's what needs to be done. Gets the oxygen back to the brain, and they'll usually come to with a headache and not feeling too well. You just don't want to have them sit up too soon. Get them something to sip on, potentially.
It took me a while when I'd fainted. I mean, I didn't feel better till the next morning.
Yeah, it can be. It can be something. Yeah. And if it reoccurs, if there's associated headache, you know, if there's maybe some left-sided weakness, right-sided weakness, slurred speech, inability to concentrate, seizure activity, and even seizure activity with a syncopal episode is not something to freak out about. It could be just a relationship to the sudden drop in circulation of oxygen to the brain causes a seizure. It's a one-time seizure, not epilepsy or not from a tumor or anything like that. But it's something then to have followed up on.
Well, let me ask this. So what you're suggesting is calling 911 doesn't guarantee a visit.
No, not necessarily, no.
Okay. Mm-mm. So that's why it doesn't hurt to call 911.
No. I think you've got some EMS providers out there that if you thought it was important enough for yourself to call me, they're getting a ride downtown, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I've heard that kind of mentality. You're still ultimately in control of your healthcare. Mm-hmm. So if everything clears up and they do a full EKG and they're doing assessment, the paramedics are not going and the EMTs are not going to be able to say, your loved one is absolutely fine. I can look into the crystal ball and tell you there's nothing wrong.
Right.
All they're going to be able to say, and this is what I would say to you if I was the paramedic and you were the patient.
Right.
Sir, you passed out. Now, there's a number of reasons why you could have passed out, and I can't tell you what any one of those reasons are right now.
Got it.
Your heart looks fine. Your blood sugar's fine. You look fine now. You don't have any associated injuries. However, I can't guarantee you that it's not a tumor or that it's not something bigger than that or it was a heart dysrhythmia.
You can't rule everything out.
So the best thing you could do is go and get evaluated so that you can go home tonight with your family and go to sleep knowing you've got great chances of waking up in the morning.
Yeah.
That's how I always did that because something disrupted your life. It's probably worth an insurance checkup.
Yeah.
You with me?
Yeah.
And rule out some big things. And then at least you knew you did the due diligence in getting checked out, especially if it's something out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
Right? If you know you have low blood sugar events, well, then it's not so out of the ordinary. If a person knows they have epilepsy and have had all the head scans and all the blood work and everything, and they're just an unknown etiology, they don't know why they have seizures, they just do, that's called epilepsy, well, then it's pretty common. They shouldn't probably have to have a ride downtown every time that happens.
Okay.
So those are some of the things to look at, and always consult your medical professional to get more advice on that. And then last but not least is traumatic or non-traumatic back pain with numbness or paralysis. Mm-hmm. We don't move them. We call 911.
Yep.
How's that?
There you go.
Wow. So, last week's poll question was, is the fear of what's in the water keeping you out of open water, such as oceans or big lakes?
100% yes.
Yeah. That's what we hit. 100% of people said yes.
I think Dan got all his friends together.
Listen, I didn't like the idea of a shark taking my head into its mouth.
Barracuda.
Yeah. No thanks. I don't even like the idea of those lampreys. They're kind of...
jellyfish.
Ooh, yeah.
Not in Lake Michigan.
Yeah. So, I think that does affect people.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in the water, have fun, and I'm not coming out alive.
I know a lot of kids at camp that said, I'm not swimming in the lake.
Really?
Because they didn't want to get the seaweed.
Oh.
They were afraid of what's in the water.
Yeah,
that's true. Whether it be something
simple. Snapper turtles.
Well,
snapper turtles. Lake I grew up, I mean. Yeah.
They don't
Things were ugly.
Yeah, yeah. They don't mess with you. Yeah.
Swim right after you wipe out on your slalom ski. And
friend of mine told me yesterday, just last night over a cup of coffee, he says, as kids, we'd have this big snapper was in a pool of water.
Yeah.
And they were kind of chasing it around with a stick. The stick was probably 1.5 inches in diameter.
Yeah.
Stuck it near the thing's mouth. It snapped it in two.
Well, they were messing with a dumb
turtle. I know, but think about the pressure.
Hello.
Per yeah. square inch of that jaw. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to mess with them.
Yeah, bye-bye finger.
Uh-uh.
No thanks. Yeah, that's enough. But pools are always nice. So this week's poll question, do you fear what your cell phone is doing to you, and will it affect how much you use it? Yes or no?
That's easy, people.
Yep.
Two choices. Yes or no.
So from the guttural noises of the iRescue Radio studios, I'm Roy.
I'm Jody.
I'm Dan.
And we'll talk to you next week.
If you have anything you would like to contribute to iRescue Radio, you can contact us toll-free at 866-661-5701 or visit our website at iRescueRadio.com. The commentaries in this podcast may not reflect the views of iRescue Radio or any of its sponsors or subsidiaries. iRescue Radio will not be held liable for any damages resulting from the advice given in this podcast.